Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 43, episode 43 in a collector series. You may have noticed this week when you got your paycheck, there was a little more money in it, and that is due to a cut in payroll taxes, part of the tax deal that was worked out between Barack Obama and Senate and congressional Republicans, the big tax cut deal that passed in the lame duck session. As part of that, there is a 2 percentage point reduction in Social Security taxes that are paid in our payroll taxes when we get our paycheck every 2 weeks, and so you may notice there's a little bit more money in your direct deposit. The fact that prompted one of the listeners to break down Paul Smith, who's a friend of the show, to email and ask the following question, which I thought was fascinating. When did it become the norm for businesses to only pay their employees every 2 weeks rather than, say, every day? And as I thought about it, I thought, well, Paul has a really good point, because the fact of the matter is, in a certain way, paying every 2 weeks extends to labor extending their bosses a 0% interest loan for the duration of the pay period. And so to answer this question about how the sort of 2 week pay period got normalized, we have Nelson Lichtenstein. He's a professor at history at UC Santa Barbara. He's currently director of the Center for the Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy. He's author of The Retail Revolution, How Walmart Created a Brave New World of Business, among many other books. He's a legend in labor history. Nelson, thanks so much for coming on The Breakdown.
Delighted to be here.
So this is sort of an interesting question. Let's reach back, okay, into let's say, you know, the 19th century. How did workers get paid before we had direct deposit, before we have the sort of current system that is pretty, I think, consistent across almost every different field, public sector, private sector, you get a paycheck every 2 weeks. Let's say we're back in the 19th century. I'm a factory worker. How am I getting paid?
Yeah, well, a lot of workers in the 19th century were paid actually on a much longer time frame than every day or every week. If they were agricultural, and there were various forms of unfree labor, not just slavery, but kind of linking to the land, they were kept on, and they'd be paid in kind, you know, food, lodging, and then maybe every month or sometimes even at the end of the season, they'd be paid for, you know, a seaman. A big industry of seamen. If you've read your Moby Dick, read your Tales of the Sea, they didn't get paid for 2 years because once you got back to port with all your blubber or whatever you had, they would then divide up the profits and you get paid. So actually, there was never a time when workers were paid every day. It was quite the opposite. They were paid at long periods. This reflected kind of the unfree labor regimes, indentured servitude, slavery, agricultural labor, etc. Seamen were practically slaves on the ship until they got back. Now, in factory labor, they were paid in cash. They had an envelope, the pay packet. So they were usually paid Saturday afternoon, and that often reflected the previous week. So paid once a week, and they paid them Saturday afternoon. So if they got drunk, they would have Sunday to sleep it off. They wouldn't be paid on like a Thursday or something. You probably could have paid them earlier in the week, but they didn't want to. They thought they'd be drunk. So that was the pay packet. And in factory labor, it would be once a week. But even then, there were various schemes. They would deduct things from like in the mines, they would deduct for the powder, they'd deduct for the lamps. There were all sorts of deduct for the company store,
sure,
etc. And then, of course, in the South, the infamous crop lien system, where the local merchant would so-called furnish, you know, the mules and the plows and the seed. And there, you know, you never got paid. You were always in debt. I mean, so employers have had lots of schemes for making use of workers' money. Now, a modern system came into effect in really the 30s. First of all, when you got first Social Security, which is passed in 35, but I think that the actual deductions from the pay envelope came in 36 or 37. And then, even more important, when you got the mass payroll tax, the tax on wages that we're very familiar with came in 1942 in the middle of the war when the income tax was extended to the entire working class. That was the first time that took place. At that point, you needed some way to deduct. You know, you had a very primitive computer. tutors or, you know, people to figure it out. And then checks came into the fore because you were sending the money directly to the Treasury. That's when the check came in. Well, of course, when you have checks and you have accountants, from the company's point of view, more efficient to pay every 2 weeks, you know, because you don't have to do the figuring out every week. So, yes, the company does have use of that money free over a 2 week or sometimes even a monthly period. Yeah.
So that's actually really interesting. So what you're saying is essentially what we think of as the paycheck, yeah, as the sort of pillar of what being a wage earner is, right? that's actually institutionalized by a tax regime. The tax regime made it necessarily that there was regularity such that everyone in the chain from, say, factory owners or human resources department to the IRS had to have a sort of predictable schedule whereby this money was transferred.
Right, right. I mean, the white-collar workers tended probably in the teens and 20s, they were paid by salary. They were not paid, you know, hourly. So in one sense, it's easier to, you know, okay, you pay them by the month of the week. They probably got their checks a little earlier. Tax regimes often force various kinds of accounting, other kind of rules on the companies. And that's exactly what happened. And then various other things that get deducted, workman's compensation. And then union dues, by the way, union dues were very, very commonly deducted from the paycheck in the beginning of the late 30s and through the 40s.
So just to sort of imagine a different future, I mean, you know, one of the things we saw during the financial crisis is the dependency of most large industrial entities, commercial entities, certainly financial entities, on short-term overnight funding. That's the commercial paper market. And the commercial paper market is actually utilized where you borrow very large amounts of money for very short periods of time at very low interest. Now that we have the technology in place that you could do a direct deposit at the end of every day, is it not the case that essentially we've backed up de facto into a situation in which workers are lending their employers at 0% interest quite a bit of money?
Well, that's certainly true. And you're right that with modern techniques, you could deposit every day. You could probably deposit every hour. It would be hard. But here's the thing. It's not a technological issue. It's a social and labor relations issue. Let's say you work, as do 20 million Americans, at various forms of service and retail, or more than that, actually. Okay, the companies like Walmart do not want their employees to have a fixed, predictable work week. It is a form of managerial authority and flexibility and power. They want to vary the work week, the hours, according to the number of, you know, sales, customers, penalizing or rewarding employees. So one of the major things, for example, that a managers do at Walmart, which is true for every other service sector, is their primary work is labor management, i.e., yes, Sally, I'll give you, you know, the extra three hours you want, because, you know, okay, you can go home because your kid's sick. You know, that kind of thing is what they do all the time. So it's not predictable, and it would create an enormous amount of work if every day they were sort of punching in exactly how many hours. I mean, maybe it could be done, but certainly the managers and these companies don't want to relinquish that kind of control, rewards and penalties in terms of the hours of work.
Sure, although what occurs to me is that essentially the two-week pay period is so institutionalized, it's invisible. Mm-hmm. Well, once you think about it as essentially an extension of a form of credit in a certain way, mm-hmm, then you think about, well, okay, when people are short, right, and they need a bridge loan to get them from one paycheck to the next, they go pay tremendously usurious rates at payday lenders who fill exactly that niche. So there's actually this, like, terrible yield spread, right? I mean,
yeah, no, you're absolutely right on that. And payday lenders are really horrific, and the efforts to reform that, I think they actually kind of didn't succeed, as I recall. But anyway, yes, you're absolutely right. And there is this tremendous gap. But look, keep your eye on the main ball. The main thing is that wage work does not pay enough by a factor of at least 33%. I mean, the minimum wage day is one-third lower than it was at its height in the 60s and 70s. So the real problem is not the few percentage points that the companies are gaming here.
Sure.
It's that wages are simply too low, period.
That, you're not going to get an argument from me. Nelson Lichtenstein is a professor of history at UC Santa Barbara. He's a labor historian. He runs the Center for Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy. And it's been a pleasure to have you on The Breakdown. Thanks so much.
Been fun. Bye-bye.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audiocasts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available in iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Ryan Rafferty and yours truly. Senior producer at The Nation is Emily Douglas. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to?